So in this session, one of the things that originally we were only going to talk about deployment and getting your apps out there, but I thought it'd be a lot more interesting to go into some of the other features like performance counters. And I also wanted to work in some App Fabric, because App Fabric is something that we don't usually talk too much about unless you see a specific session. There is a great one at PDC that goes into App Fabric, but as you can see here, we've got, well, as you might not be able to see, depending on the contrast there where you're sitting, but we have three pillars inside Windows, the Windows Azure platform. We have Windows Azure, which is the first pillar where we talked about compute and storage. And that's really the heart of everything, where you would host your VMs and put all your storage out there. And one of the things that I wanted to mention here too is that, this isn't, you know, use one and you have to use them all. You can pick and choose which services you'd like. So you might want to use storage just to host image files to help take the load off of your services, as an example. Or you might use compute, or you might just use SQL Azure and so on. Now SQL Azure is another big pillar for us, but then all the way on the right side is the Windows Azure App Fabric. And that has a connectivity service bus that you can leverage, and then it also has access control. So if you're in a situation where you're trying to get identity federation between two corporations, as an example, that would that can facilitate that for you. So just to set the expectations of what we're going to talk about, and we can probably cut these times in half, but we'll dive into some of the management API, and then also get into some PowerShell for common tasks, and then monitoring and performance counters and everything else. So let's get started. And what we're going to do is, let me minimize this here. Now, what I wanted to start off with, because I know I made the point earlier today that I was going to show you how to do this, so let's just jump back in time here. Someone had asked earlier, how do you map specific your own domain names to your Azure services? So if I would like, for example, instead of worldmaps.cloudapp.net, if I want my own www address, I can create a CNAME directly with my registrar and have that point over to worldmaps.cloudapp.net. And that's really all you have to do. I could log in to GoDaddy and show you that. But there's really nothing magic to that. The trick is if you log into your storage account, how do you make use of the CDN, which is the content delivery network, and then how do we map custom domains to our blob storage account? Now, the CDN, if you've got images that you want geographically distributed, so they're edge cached around the world, then you can leverage the Azure CDN, and that will do that for you. So it gives you much better performance. So if I've got my server hosted in South Central, but I still want great performance around the world, images are usually one of the most painful things for browsers to download if there's really low latency due to the file size. So we can leverage then the CDN to do that. Now, what you can see here is that the CDN gives you a pretty wacky URL that's kind of hard to remember, but this is the CDN point for my site. Likewise, for the endpoint for the WorldMaps app is worldmaps.blob.core.windows.net. So not that people are going to necessarily be looking inside the HTML code for where all this is coming from. I'd still like to have friendly URLs, because it just makes me feel better. It also gives me portability. If I ever want to change this or stop using a service or something else, it's just a little bit easier to manage. So within here, within the custom domains on your storage account, we can take these endpoints and then map them to custom domain names like so. So, for example, all my basic images and stats files are all on content.myworldmaps.net, but then things that I want edge cached that I'm not changing very frequently, I'll put up on CDN. And that's all you have to do. So instead of having to put these URLs directly within my page code, I could just leverage my own names. So that's a quick look at how to do that. So the next thing we're going to do is show you how to leverage the management API. So what I'm going to do is come into the account settings here. And the first thing is, you notice that whenever we did something with our service, we had to log into this website. And that's fine, but what if you're in a situation where you want to do something programmatic? Or what if you're the account administrator and you don't want to give all the developers, your live ID and password? That's where the management API comes in handy. So what I'm going to do here is click on Manage My API Certificates. And when you come in here, what we'll see is all of the certificates that we've already uploaded, including the thumbprints and then the validity dates and so on. And what you could do is you could take a CER file and upload it. Once it's in Azure Storage, if you can prove to Azure that you have that management key by sending it with every request, because management is a REST service, so you have to send the key every time you do something, then you can do whatever you'd like without having to log into the interface. Now, of course, you might say, well, how do I do that, and how do I, first of all, create a certificate file? Well, what we can do is I've got a demo here. I have this posted in my blog, but let me dive down into my projects folder. And I'll show you exactly what kind of command line you could do to create a certificate. Now, this is it right here. If you can use the one of two ways that I know of is one is using the make cert command, which is right here. This is included as part of the Windows SDK. So you probably, if you're a developer, already have this on your machine, you don't even know it. Or you can use IIS7 to create a self-signed certificate as well, if you'd like to do that. But this is the kind of command that once you have all this out there, this is like the viral command line string. Everyone puts this in their blog because no one knows how to do this from scratch. Again, you know, it's like, what was that, -REPEA-SHA-1, you know. So once we do this, though, once we have this command, it has to be at least 2048-bit length key. We'll output this to azureservicetest.cer. And when I run this command, and I've already done it, so you'll see that I've got azureservicetest.cer right here, and it also installs it to your local certificate store. So once that's installed, now we have the certificate. I can upload the CER file here, and that's how these get input into the Azure API. So now what I want to do is anytime I'd like programmatic access to it, then I can send that certificate, and we're good to go. So just one example is if I come back into Cloud Storage Studio, we looked at blobs, tables, and queues up here, but the other thing we could do is manage our subscriptions down here, and I've already added my API key, so now that gives it programmatic access where I could dive in here and open this up, and you'll see that what Cloud Storage Studio does is it tries to mimic the website, right? It looks very similar to what it looks like in the website, but this is them just creating that UI for us. Otherwise, they're just querying the data, and the REST interface is giving it back. But that's just the first thing we can do. I'll minimize that, and in this folder, one of the things that I have here are a bunch of PowerShell scripts. Now, I don't want to dive too much into PowerShell because this isn't a PowerShell talk, but PowerShell is really handy specifically for scripting simple tasks that you want full .NET and programmatic access over, otherwise you'd have to write your own application. So what I've got here is a deploy test PowerShell script. And I'll click edit, and this will open up the PowerShell environment that will let me look at what this is doing. So what I've done already is I've downloaded some PowerShell commandlets that you can get off of code.msdn.com, and this wraps some of the more difficult things you have to do to talk to the service. But once you have that, what I can do here is create a couple variables. Like in this case, what I'd like to do is deploy a new package. So suppose I just compiled and I got my CSPKG file and I've got my my configuration file. If I'd like to upload that without having to go through the website, I'll create a few variables here. For example, I'll give it my certificate name, my subscription ID, and all this is available on the interface there. If we went back to the website, it'll tell you what your subscription ID is. Our service name. I have a test service right here, and then we can specify where our package and our configuration files are, and then we can just give it a label. We'll add those Azure Management Tools snap-in. Those are the commandlets that you download, and that's what has the get hosted service commandlet and creating a new deployment and so on. So what this is doing is this is one command right here, and because it's a REST interface, it's not like we're going to create a session where we log in and are authenticated and then we can continue to do whatever we'd like. We're going to have to send our certificate every single time. And that seems like a lot of overhead, but it's really not, because usually you're only doing one or two things and then you're out. So every time we do a command, you're going to see something like this where we call get hosted service and you pass in the service name, the certificate, the subscription ID, and then you do something. And you're going to see that pattern over and over again. But what we'll do is we'll create a new deployment in the staging slot, because every deployment has two different slots. It has staging and production. And we'll pass in our package and configuration and our custom label. And then we're going to call wait to complete, because if we don't do this, it's considered an asynchronous operation and it will come back right away. But if I call wait to complete, what's going to happen? I won't even try to do this over our connection here now, but what it'll try to do is upload our package file, and it will wait for that to complete. And once it's done, we'll continue on. Again, we'll come down here to our next command, which does the same thing, service name, subscription ID, and then we're going to set the status to running. And that will go ahead. That's like clicking the start button, because by default, it's in a stopped state. So if I were to run the script, I can come back, you know, 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, and everything will be up and running. I could even build this into a manual process. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, hey, can I do this to automatically scale and manage my application? And the answer is yes, and that's what we can do. This is the way to do it. So what I can do, I've got another PowerShell script here that adjusts the number of instances of my application that are running. And I'll have all these up on my blog, and I think I've done a screencast on this as well. But the same kind of thing where I've got my standard header here where I get my certificate, subscription, service, and everything else. But now we'll call get hosted service. Okay, same thing. And we'll go against the production slot. And I'm going to set the deployment configuration where we access the roles configuration property of the world map's role, and we'll adjust the instance count by adding one to it. So this will add one instance count to it. Now I could set this to, I could say, make it 100 and go ahead and it will then spin up 100 new instances of my world map site. I can do whatever I'd like here. You can't go to zero, but I can bring it down to one. And so this gives us at least a little bit of a way that we can start massaging our application dynamically. So a good scenario here, some people say that are writing business applications have their apps that are only running either during business hours or they're particularly heavy during business hours. So what they could do is they could write a script that that gets executed at, you know, such and such a time, you know, maybe 9 a.m. Monday morning, we'll spin up new instances, and Friday it's at whatever time after business hours, take them down again. So that's an example of something you could do, and this is obviously not a lot of code to do that. Now, Azure does not have a method where you can automatically kick this off. You would have to implement this, so, or host this yourself. But nevertheless, the functionality is there. So the last thing is, if you're going to be adjusting instances, what about getting the data out of it, like performance counters? So if you are, you know, we've talked a lot about this today, but if you've got a website that's out there and you've got, say, 2, 4, or 100 web servers, how do you know that that's how many web servers you need? Anybody? How do you know? How do you know you need 10 or 20?
Roll a 20-sided dice.
Roll a 20-sided die. I like that. That's good. That's the Joe Healy approach. I like it. Anybody else? Number of hits? Yeah, that's a good one. I heard logs or something else. Yeah, there isn't one, you know, number, you know, or you log into your server, it says, I need help, you know, that's how you know that more. But there isn't one thing to look at, but there's a lot of things to take into consideration. Part of it is based on what your app is doing, but one of the most useful things to do is look at your performance counters. And if you are local, you could just open up Perfmon and you could start looking at CPU consumption and everything else. But with Windows Azure, it's really no different. You can still look at all the performance counters, but the difference is you don't have admin rights. You can't log into the box. So you're a little bit more limited in terms of that respect. But the Azure team has thought of that, and they created an Azure Diagnostics Monitor that you can then use and plug it in, and it will do some of that work for you, take some of those numbers, put them out to Azure Table Storage, and then you can crunch the data. Let me show you what I'm talking about. So here is, again, the world map site, and I'm going to go to my webroll.cs file. Now, by default, when you create a new web role, you pretty much have an empty onStart method. There's really nothing in there. It does start the diagnostics monitor for you, but it's not doing anything, right? It's just starting the process. So what I've done is I've modified the diagnostics monitor to do some things. In this case, I'm going to add some performance counters to it. So the first thing we'll do is we'll get our diagnostics configuration, get our default configuration here, and then we'll come through and we'll access the performance counters property of the diagnostics configuration, and it has a data source that we can add. So all the performance counters have standard strings, and again, you're going to have to learn what they are, but in this case, if I'd like to look at the total processor time, this is the same thing. If I were to punch that in Perfmon, I'd see the exact same thing. It's a standard counter string. So what we'll do is for each performance counter we'd like to look at, we'll create a new performance counter configuration. And then the other thing we need to do is specify the sample rate. the sample rate says, how often do you want me to measure that value? So in this case, I'm just doing a general measurement every 10 minutes. If you were really having problems, you might start looking at it every second or every couple of seconds. It's really up to you. And so we'll also look at the amount of RAM. And then perhaps one of the most important ones to look at is the number of requests per second that ASP.NET is getting. And we'll look at all of those again every 10 minutes. And then the other thing you got to tell Diagnostics Monitor is, I'm looking at those every 10 minutes, but how often do you want me to transfer those to Azure Table Storage? Because obviously more frequent is nice because you have the data there right away, but then you're also getting more transaction charges. So you just have to kind of balance the two. And in this case, I'm going to have it transfer every 10 minutes as well. But wait, there's more. We can also configure Windows event logs. So I can grab the system and the application event logs. And the other thing I could do is specify a log level filter. In this case, I'm going to say, give me error messages only, because if you've ever opened it up and see how many, you know, gazillion informational events you have in there, I'm not interested. Just give me errors and transfer those every 10 minutes. And same thing with our Azure application logs. Remember those trace statements Joe put in his application where you could see it in the console window? Well, those get added to the Azure trace, to your application logs. So I can get access to those as well by specifying that here. So I'll grab all of those events here by specifying information, and then we'll just call Diagnostics Monitor Start. Now, by default, inside your application, this is the only line that you have unless you go ahead and implement more. It'll just call Start. And so with that running, and it's been running for quite some time, if I were to go back to here, and I've got my storage account. Remember, we can go into tables, close all these windows. Now you see we have all these tables that are created. These are created by Windows Azure Diagnostics, hence the WAD. And so I've got my infrastructure logs table, my performance counters table. I've got all the everything that I told it to track, it's tracking. And so to give you an example, I can open this up. This might take it a moment because you know, the connection is going to try to pull a lot of these down. But what's going to happen now is by opening this table, it'll try to pull the first 1,000 rows, and it's going to go out, and it's going to pull all the performance counter data. And you can see that, again, this is the nice thing about Azure Table Storage, is that it will automatically give it a partition and a row key. That Diagnostics Monitor does that. But then it will just go ahead and put all the values in here. So, for example, we have the role instance, the counter name, and then the counter value. And so we'll see these get repeated over time, these three, because those are the three that I'm monitoring. And so that gives me a way now to have visibility into what my app is doing. So it's pretty cool. Now, of course, this is kind of a miserable way to view the data. It's there, and you could write an app that goes against it and tries to aggregate it. In fact, Cerebrata, the same company that makes this tool, has already done that with cloud storage. They make a new one called Azure Diagnostics Monitor. And what this does is it looks very similar in interface, but we can go against the performance counters. You can see it's aggregated in a much friendlier way here, where I've got my three performance counters. It shows me the min, max, and the average values and the number of data points. And I can also plot those out, and we can watch that over time. So that's a much nicer way as well to get the data. And you can see here what I did is I've got two roles, and I didn't have the role here. This is intentional. To show you that my app is getting, you know, about a little more than two requests per second, typically during business hours. So the next day in the morning, I added a new instance, and you can see it, you know, kept it a little bit lower. So again, these are some metrics for you, and I can also then, my application does some pretty heavy caching. So how do you know if that's effective? Well, you're going to have to measure it somehow, and this is how you can measure it, where I could look at the RAM utilization and so forth and see how this is done. So anyway, it's a cool tool. You can go up to Cerebrata and check it out, or you can write your own, or, you know, whatever suits your app, you know, your needs. But it's a pretty cool way to do it. Likewise, I can go into the trace logs, and instead of looking at it in tables, I can come in here and I can say I had a primary key violation or any other information that is in there. Again, easier than looking at it directly in table storage. So check that out. Now, the other thing we can do is we can have programmatic access to that by, in this case, I've got a PowerShell script to adjust my performance counter, where just to show you this briefly, where what we can do is we can create these performance counters directly in PowerShell script. In this case, I'm creating the same three, and then we'll just go ahead and add that dynamically. So the real cool part about this is, suppose you didn't configure your performance counters, but it's Monday morning, you want to start looking at them. Well, I could run this script. It will start using these performance counters, and then if I'm done, I'll just turn it off. I'll just have them remove all of these performance counters. So you don't need to have it running for the entire lifespan of your application. You can just turn it on when you want to monitor and then turn it off when you're done. So again, you can only do that through the management API. It's just a pretty powerful thing to do. Question? Is there an applet or a tool for keeping track? So in the management API to see all the operations? Good question. So the question was, is there a way to track all basically the events going on inside the management API? Yeah, great question. Not to my knowledge. I don't know of a tool. I'm not saying there isn't one, but sure. Yeah. Yeah, something could be done. Although if you've got the key for the management API, yeah, I'm not sure how you could do that necessarily. I'm trying to think of a good way to do that. Nothing coming to the top of my head right now. But I'll give that some thought. Let that churn on a background thread here and see what I can come up with. So anyway, that's a quick look at performance counters and doing that remotely. And even though we only spent a few minutes doing it, I think you can see how cool that can be then. It can really give you control, and you can have regular scripts and have that take care of your application. The other thing you could do, and I won't bother going into all these demos with the tool, but the tool will also then let you configure the performance counters by knowing the string names of all those counters, so you don't have to look them up, so it has them in there, so that's pretty nice as well. Now, I should mention here, though, too, is you can't add custom performance counters. Some people do that. They like to have custom performance counters for their app. Unfortunately, that needs admin rights, so you won't be able to do that. You'll have to rely on the built-in performance counters. So that was a quick look at what did we talk about? We talked about the management API using some PowerShell, really quick look at monitoring and how to get access to those logs. What I'd like to do is jump over to the App Fabric and show you some demos there. Now, we'll just keep this at a real high level, but one of the things that the App Fabric has is it acts as a service bus, and that's the part that I'm going to show you today is how to use it. Now, the App Fabric itself, it does not host your services. The whole point is to help you connect your services to other services. So it's not hosting. You could host them in Windows Azure as an application, but that's not what the App Fabric is doing. So what I'm going to do here is I've got my server running, and what you do is when you go into the App Fabric up on the site, you get a key and an owner and all that, a password basically, and that's all right here. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a namespace, and what I want to do is bind my service to it. It's a standard WCF service, and in this case, this is going to be pretty simple. Where if you've ever worked with WCF and you worked with contracts, this is going to be real simple. Where all we're going to do is have our service do one thing, and that's going to have a contract that says, okay, that my service has to echo back anything it's given. So that's it. That's all my service is doing. So nothing too advanced here. We give it some text, it echoes it back. But instead of binding this here on localhost, I'm just going to set up the endpoint to be worldmaps.servicebus.windows.net. And once we set that all up and give it the right endpoints, we'll go ahead and, in this case, this is my client that will talk to that service where it's going to say enter text to echo. And then my actual application over here that is hosting that service right here, here's the echo service itself that will take that text that comes in and echo it back out. So I'll go ahead and we'll start the service up here. And while that's spinning up, come back to my program. All right, and I'll take my client, and we'll start up a new instance of that. So what I've essentially done now is I've got my service running here. Hopefully. All right. Any day now. We'll just wait for this to start. Now, so my service is running down here already, and we can see this right here, and I've got my console app, which is my client, and I can say hello. And you can see that we talked to the server, which is down here, and we can see that it echoed that message out. So, and we did this through the service bus. So, of course, you're saying that is the best thing I've ever seen. I thought the same thing.
That is the best thing that I've ever seen.
Yeah. So, of course, this isn't that interesting because you'd say, well, why would I go through the service bus to talk if you're on localhost? It doesn't really make sense. Well, in that situation, you're right, it doesn't make sense. But what would be cool would be if you are in a situation where you're trying to talk to two different clients that are behind firewalls and much more complicated situations. So, for example, the computers that we have here are behind this router here that's connected to a 3G access point, and we've got a 192 address. Well, what I did was, before I left on my road trip about 2 weeks ago, is I took this very same application, I started it on my desktop on my home machine. And so instead of on Echo service here, what I've done is I've called it home service. So I'm just going to change my endpoint here to home service, okay? And so what I'm going to do now is we're going to start a new instance here. Now, before this starts, I give this a pretty high probability of not working because the kids like to, you know, bash and hit buttons and do all that kind of stuff. So it's completely possible this isn't going to work. But what we'll do is we'll dive in here. And so now it's magnifier. Nice. Doesn't really work over live meeting too well, does it? Yeah, I'll skip it. So now it's going to say, okay, what text do you want to echo? And I'll just say hello again. And now we can see that I'm not running the server here locally. Now we can see that it says Brian's home machine says hello again. So this message is coming off of my desktop at home. Now, so you can see start to see some of the advantage here where I didn't specify where my home, it has no knowledge of where my home machine is. I didn't have to open up a firewall rule. It doesn't matter that it is on a 192 address and I'm on a 192 address. It just works. So it's a pretty cool thing. Now the other cool demo that I'd like to show you with App Fabric is, I'll open up this one. Now that one, the first demo that I showed you just uses a simple relay. So it's relaying a messages. But what if we'd like to listen to events as well? And that gives us essentially a pub-sub model, right, where I could not only push messages out to a server, but then I can also listen to messages coming in. And so we could do that as well. And it's a very similar type of application, but I'm going to ahead and start this. And what it's going to do is ask me, what do I want to call my chat session? So I'll just call it MSDN. And my nickname is Brian. Now, this is going to take a minute for it to connect, so I'll just babble for a few minutes. But essentially, the concept is exactly the same, where we have a service now which can publish messages to it, and it can also subscribe. And once we connect, what this app does is it essentially gives us a little bit of a chat room. Thanks, Joe. That's nice. So you can see here that we're in our I'm exiting out of this. Okay, let's there. I left. So on his machine it says Brian left the room, right? So it's pretty cool. So it's a real simple way. He, you know, in this case, we're talking through the service bus. It wouldn't matter if he was around the world, it doesn't matter, it'll just work. And so that's what the whole point. As long as we could both see the service bus, our messages, we can communicate. So again, a quick look at what you can do. This demo is part of the App Fabric sample, so you can download and play around with it. So it's pretty cool. Check it out.
So you just reinvented IRC.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And it's more reliable than our own communicator product. So
no comment.
Well, I'm kidding. I'm gonna get in trouble for that one. So wow, zing. And that's coming from everybody here. I can't imagine if anybody at Microsoft is listening to that.
There are only 43 people left on live meeting.
All right, good. All right. As long as we don't have that up for download, I'm covered. So let's get into pricing. So I want to save this to the end, not to be like a salesman, like, hey, and now the pricing. But I wanted to save it to the end because if you don't know what App Fabric does, if you don't know what the storage is, if you don't know what SQLizer is, it's kind of hard to quantify what the pricing is until you know what it is. So up here, we've got a pricing slide that goes into it. And so Windows Azure, a small instance by default is 12 cents an hour. That number is linear based on the CPU size. So if you've got a medium size, which is a dual core machine, you saw Joe go into that, and then you can go to a large, which is a four core, and or an extra large, which is an eight core. That number goes from 12, 24, 48, and 96 cents an hour. Okay. So that's how that works. Now, the storage, and then the ingress and egress, data charges are 10 cents and 15 cents, respectively. Now, you don't get charged for data that's moving in the data center already. So if I'm talking from Windows Azure to SQL Azure and I'm both in South Central, I don't get charged for that. Only when I'm outside of those realms will I get charged. So if I'm downloading my database, I'll get charged for those types of things, okay? And then storage transactions I mentioned before are a penny per 10,000. So whether that's a lot or a little really kind of depends on your application. I will tell you, though, that led to part of the decision why I chose SQL Azure for my application, because I'm doing, you know, on the order of several hundred thousand hits per day, and each one of those is at least one transaction. So for me, it was actually more cost-effective to go with SQL Azure, and that's just me. And so the transaction costs are probably one of the biggest things that is a variable inside the pricing, because you're going to know, hey, 12 cents an hour, I need two instances, and you can multiply that out over 30 days. Pretty easy number. In fact, a single instance ends up being about $86 a month, roughly. Depends how many days are in a month, right? But that's somewhat of a fixed cost. It's the transactions that aren't fixed. And so that's just something to figure out for yourself, how that works. SQL Azure is, there's a 1 gig and a 10 gig model at, basically $10 and $100 a month. Those numbers, from what I understand, are going to be increasing pretty soon. So I know that a lot of people say, gosh, 1 gig and 10 gig doesn't sound very big for a cloud database. But remember, it's our initial offering. We had a lot of changes to SQL Azure over time and CloudDB, and so this is our first offering. We wanted to make sure that we had to put a strong SLA first before we worried about catering to, you know, huge, you know, many dozen gigabyte database sizes. And then App Fabric as well, the pricing is up there, basically charged 15 cents per 100,000 messages and then also data charges. So I'll leave this pricing slide up there. Any questions I can answer on either the performance or App Fabric or anything else? No questions at all. Joe, make up a question. I gotta answer something.
Okay. Nope. I know all the hot buttons, so I'll duck it and cover.
Yeah, so there's a question back there. Yeah. Was there a question?
I saw a guy point.
Oh, okay. Oh, good one. Yeah. So just for everybody out there, average airspeed of an unleaded swarm. Yeah.
I forgot. I kind of remember the number.
Yeah.
34.5.
I don't know. Yeah. So anyway. Yes. Go ahead.
So the monthly cost for the definition here comes to $9.99. If you bring a database up for an hour and you plot it,
Great question. So the question is if it's charged $9.99 a month and you put up a database for an hour and then pull it down, are you charged $9.99 or are you charged a prorated rate? Boy, you know, I've seen it mentioned how they prorate it, but I believe you get charged for the full month. I don't know that for sure, though. I got to be honest, I don't know. So I'll look into that and I'll try to get an answer published. So I don't know. That is a great question, though. Having said that, one thing I will point out, the Azure Compute, it is charged, as Joe said in the first session, as he's familiar with, is 1 hour minimum. And so if you put up a compute instance just to test it out and you take it down 5 minutes later, you get charged for the full hour. So I just let you know how that
12
works.
12 cents. 12 cents.
12 cents, yes. So that's how that works. Any other questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You can have like
Right. So, so basically the question is since SQL Azure is throttled, how many instances really can you have, and what if you scale out to 1,000 instances of your website all hitting your SQL Azure instance? There isn't a magical formula for it. It would depend on how much volume your site is doing. One of the things we usually recommend is that you have some type of sharding approach where you have multiple databases to handle that. Now, if you set 1,000 instances all hitting that were all under, say, moderate volume, yeah, I think that would be a bit high for it, but it kind of depends on what they're doing. There could be, sharding is one approach you might take, so you end up having multiple databases, and depending on the role, they could write to, whatever database is appropriate. Or if you need that many instances for a truly massive scale like that, then a better approach might be to use Azure Table Storage or one of the other Azure storage options other than SQL Azure. So, but great question. Yes. Great point.
Yeah, the starters.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. So let me reiterate that, is there's a lot of programs out there. If you go up to the Azure site, you'll see some, sign up now and you get 6 months of this for free or at a reduced rate. Also, if you're an MSDN subscriber, you're entitled to so many compute hours per month. I think right now, for the first, I think it's 8 months, you have 700 and something hours, which is equivalent to running a VM, small VM, all month. Partners also have access to certain promotions, and I don't know what all of them are, but they are out there, so take advantage of them. Yes?
That promotional one only goes to July 31st.
Okay, that one that he was referring to only goes to July 31st. Yeah, each one has different, different lengths depending on, specifically since we just came out of CTP last month, a lot of them are going to be, somewhat short-lived as we just start ramping up on it. But
you mentioned BizSpark?
Yeah, BizSpark is another one. Do we have any BizSpark partners here? Okay, so if you're starting up a business or if you...
Rephrase it like this. We got anyone who's been in business less than 3 years, has revenue less than $1 million, and is not publicly traded.
There you go.
Nobody. All right. All right, so there are two, three guys in the back.
Yeah.
So BizSpark is a program to get our software in the hands of software startups so they can build on that. It's essentially... $99 exit program, but on the exit from the program after 3 years. But during that 3 year period, you get production licenses, software, support incidents, MSDN Pro for free, or for the $99 that you pay on the end. So that's production software licenses do that. There's also Azure hours included in that. If you're in the business of building websites for other people, we have something called Website Spark. That does a similar thing for folks who are in the business of building, websites for other people. Interested on those, email me. I can get you the details on them, but jhealy@microsoft.com.
Yeah.
The moral is, as a startup, you should have a pretty good grace period for you have to pay for our software. So 3 years.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. I don't know if anyone out there heard that. Hopefully it caught my mic. I don't know if your mic was on. But Oh, was it? Okay, great. So one of the things that so if anyone is interested in BizSpark or Website Spark, please hit us up either now or over email. Love to help you out with that. I do have some slides here. Joe already went into this, so I don't want to spend too much time, but just talking about Amazon Web Services and some of the differences. If you played around with EC2, you essentially get a full-featured VM on Amazon that you can play around with, and this is very handy if you want to, say, have complete control over a box. So it's given to you as an infrastructure as a service. Azure is a lot different. It's more of a platform as a service. You have less control over it, but it's also fully automated. So, and there's pros and cons with that, but I just want to point that out. Obviously, not needing to worry about patch administration or anything else is really handy. And then Joe also touched on App Engine and using Python and Java and some of the differences there. One of the nice things with App Engine, of course, is that it has automatic instancing. Hopefully we'll have something similar to that soon, but there's also not a service level agreement currently. So, it's something to think about too with the applications. So anyway, that's, Just giving us a quick look at that. Happy to take any other questions, but I think what we'll do is if you could fill out the eval.